Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Well, it's been another fantastic, crazy, exciting week. Good news, bad news. I want to get to it right away. In the meantime, though, if you wish to call in, the numbers on your screen, 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. I am pleased to hear from you. I am happy to speak with you. I want to go first to the Middle East. And one of the reasons is, you know, our news, haven't you noticed lately the news on television, the radio, and the newspapers, it seems to dwell on something 4 or 5 days at a time. Right now we're into Ebola. We've been into it for 3 weeks. And doesn't it make you feel like what happened to the war? What happened over with ISIS? What's going on over there in Iraq and Syria? What happened? We don't hear about it anymore. There's a World Series. We don't hear about that too much either. We seem to dwell in this country on one thing at a time. So the thing we're into right now is Ebola. It's important. It's serious. But there's other news out there. And I wish to start this evening show, not with Ebola. I'm going to get to it at some point. But with the Middle East. Now, did you ever wonder why people in the Middle East fight? The Muslims, they fight all the time. They've been fighting for thousands of years. They fight with each other. They fight with outsiders. It's a religious thing. We all know that. Their religion, for some reason, as they interpret their Quran, and I'm not saying it's interpreted correctly, but they believe they must fight, they must kill. Women are to be subjected. They're second-class citizens, et cetera, et cetera. But and why do people join? And I've always thought, and I'm sure you have thought also, that people join for religious reasons. Not with ISIS. You heard me. Not with this new group, ISIS. These are Muslims of a different breed. Okay? And I've just said it. They're not joining necessarily because of religion. They're joining, it is turning out, for sex and aggression. Sex and aggression. What do I mean by sex? Well, they don't normally get women easy over there, apparently. Whether you're a fighter, not a fighter, farmer, easy. So all these young guys, and they are primarily young guys, these ISIS fighters, they would like to have sex on a steady basis. The leaders of ISIS are aware of this. They recognize this natural need, okay, this natural need. So what they've done is set up a situation whereby they provide wives and or girlfriends and or sex slaves. And here is how it works. The single women, young girls primarily because these are young guys, they go to a center area someplace, wherever, that ISIS calls for, and they sign up to be married. They sign a list and say, I want to get married, and my name is Mary Jones. And the ISIS people, you know, connect them up with a particular guy, a particular fighter. And these two get married. Now that fighter has sex on a regular basis. I mean, he's got it made. He's got whatever young guy's looking for. But just because he's Muslim does not mean he does not want or consider sex. Now, that with the women signing up applies except for Iraqi women. For some reason, ISIS hates Iraqi women, and Iraqi women are generally captured, and we know that, and they're held. And if a fighter, an ISIS fighter, does not wish to marry, they will give him, free of charge, a sex slave. The Iraqi women are used as sex slaves. Now, he's still getting his sex. He's got this woman living with him, but the relationship's a bit different. It is his sex slave. Well, that's interesting. Now, they're aggressive. Young men are all aggressive. They got their testosterone flying when it comes to sex. They got their testosterone flying when it comes to fighting. And they're giving vent to this natural inborn aggression because they're out there fighting every day for the cause. But it's an organized cause. And being organized is like belonging to a team, a club, a fraternity. These young people now, these young fighters, have a place to be, and they belong to something that is real, that is obvious, that is respected, that is feared. It's like the street gangs in Chicago, New York. Same thing. They need to belong, and they belong, and this is another big thing. And on top of it all, they get paid. ISIS is smart. They say, well, we don't have boundaries. It's not really a nation. It's coming together like a nation. We just don't have the geographical boundaries. But ISIS is running itself like a company, like a country, like a corporation. Okay? And what they do is they pay their fighters. ISIS has a ton of money. These guys never got paid before for going out and killing and fighting. Now they do. And ISIS gets the money because, number one, they are taking Iraqi oil from the oil fields they control and selling it on the black market. They're taking in $1 million a month, ISIS, $1 million a month just from illegal oil sales. They rob banks every place they go. They lucked out in, where is it, Moscow or Moscow? I'm not pronouncing the city's name right. They went to a bank that had $240 million American money in the bank. They took that. They go to merchants in every city. They go to the merchants and they say, look, you're going to pay me every week. I don't care what we call it, a protection fee or what, but you're going to pay me every week X number of dollars. And if you don't pay me, we kill you and your wife and children. Very simple. So people pay up. They're not going to fool around. This is like the mafia from the 1920s and the 1930s. So what I am saying is these people get paid. The ISIS fighters today are getting paid. They belong to a group, and most importantly, they're getting sex, and it's all organized for them. What could be better? This is better, let me tell you. This is better than dying and going to heaven and you got 21 virgins or 19 virgins. These guys are getting their virgins here on earth. They don't have to die to have sex. Okay, let me stay in the Middle East again for a moment. I want to go to Afghanistan. I think the whole Middle East has been nothing but a black hole for us for the last 20, 30 years. We get deeper and deeper involved. It's like buying an old house that's going to cost you $200,000 to repair, and before you know it, you got $400,000 into it. It never ends. All right, we're going to Afghanistan. We're fighting two wars. We have fought two wars in Afghanistan. Each has been a failure. One was a military war, 10 years. We didn't win the war. We can say we're withdrawn. We taught them democracy. They're going to protect themselves now. They don't. These people don't want to fight. They run the other way when the enemy comes in. Democracy doesn't mean anything to people who have not had democracy all their lives. They don't follow the rules once we're gone. The tribal leaders come out of the woodwork, and they're back where they started before the war. So they have that. And we've spent billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, in Afghanistan over a 10-year period. And we have squandered and wasted many American lives. More importantly, many American lives. Well, there's another war going on over there, and it's the drug war. Recall, be aware, if you're not, that the big product in, I'm laughing as I say this because what I'm telling you sounds so stupid, the big product in Afghanistan is opium. Opium. The farmers in Afghanistan, through the war we had over there for 10 years, 11 years, and even now, they plant opium. 75% of the work production in Afghanistan, 75% is to grow opium. All right? Now, this year, we've had it, before I get to this year, we've had a major drug war in this country for over 50 years. We've been fighting drugs on the streets, and we've been very unsuccessful in stopping opium, marijuana, heroin. It's all over the place. And so our leaders thought, well, let's go to where the stuff comes from. We know opium comes from Afghanistan. We're going to go over there, and we're going to stomp it out there, the growing of opium. And once we do, there won't be as much opium coming into this country. We'll start winning the battle against drugs. Well, it turned out that we're losing the opium war too, the drug war. And the reason is, and this says it all right now, it was recently announced that last year's production of opium in Afghanistan was at a record high level. You heard me, a record high level. 516 planted acres. 516 planted acres. That's not a lot, by the way. 516 planted acres yielded $3 billion. $3 billion. Ain't no way we're going to stomp out opium growth, opium production in Afghanistan. This is the best thing the people have there. It's the easiest way and the most, it's the best way. There ain't no other way. I got to put it that way. There ain't no other way for them to make the kind of living that they're making growing opium. They did it during the 10-year war. They're doing it now, and they just had their best year ever. Let's now go to Switzerland. I talked last week about Monsanto and our GMO king, genetically modified organisms. And Monsanto's got problems on their hand all over the world right now. Central America, South America, the European Union, Asia. Nobody wants Monsanto because they're learning. Over a period of time, people have learned that the genetically modified organisms are not healthy. And people are going to get sick and are getting sick and dying already. Their herbicide Roundup turned out to have bad stuff in it, which was contaminating the seeds. And everybody's saying, get this crap out of me, out of my country. That simple, okay? Now, I mentioned last week that one of the other giants, there's four or five giants like Monsanto, is Syngenta, which, again, is a Swiss biotechnology giant. And they're into genetically modified organisms, and the big item with them is corn. Understand that corn is a worldwide trade item. It may be one of the most important food products produced worldwide because everyone grows corn, eats it, and or ships it all over the world. Well, in the past 3 months, three lawsuits have begun in the United States, in Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska against Syngenta. These are farmer class actions in each state, farmer's class action. And what they want is the court to say no more GM use in our country as to corn. The farmers in those three states, some grow corn using genetically modified organisms bought from Monsanto, Syngenta, and a bunch won't. They're still growing it naturally without the genetically modified seeds. The groups that are growing the corn without genetically modified seeds are the ones that form these class actions. And the reason that they want the court to stop Syngenta from producing GMO corn is the following. These three states, Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska, supply a ton of corn every year to China. China's their biggest customer. Well, China just said, we don't want your corn anymore. In fact, we don't want any corn from anyone in the United States. And why did they say this? Because China, their food sucks, we know. We get sick on the stuff we import from them. But they are aware that genetically modified foods are not healthy, and they don't want them in their country. And the problem with the corn is the corn that is naturally grown and the corn that has the GMO seeds, once harvested, are combined together. And you can't tell which one is GMO and which one is natural for shipment and sale. Okay. And China says, we don't know. We know there's good corn in there, but we don't know which is which. So we've got to say to all of you, no, we don't want your corn. And these farmers who have stayed straight and true are getting screwed because their corn is commingled to be sold over there. And the other problem is, not because China is not buying the corn, what happens? You have a big supply. You know from economics that when you have a big supply and a smaller demand, the price goes down. So the price of corn, the price they get for their corn, the farmers in Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska, is depressed. And that's the story about Syngenta, another company like Monsanto. I don't know if the world's going to beat Monsanto and Syngenta. These are powerful, rich companies. They don't care. And I'm going to say something else. They have the government of the United States behind them. Just look at the laws. They call it Monsanto law that supports Monsanto, and you will be shocked to see the power that has been given to Monsanto by our Congress and our presidents. I want to stay with genetically modified organisms for a moment. I mentioned last week when I was into this Monsanto thing, and this, what I'm going to say and did say, does not necessarily apply to Monsanto. But it has been predicted in several from several sources that by the year 2017, we are going to have a genetically modified man. They are going to create a human being, in effect, using these biotechnical seed techniques, and they're working on it now in the labs. And you may have thought I was crazy, and you think I'm crazy now. But let me share with you this. You remember Frankenstein? He created a man. He made a man. This Dr. Frankenstein was crazy. He created the monster, the Frankenstein monster. Well, Frankenstein walks amongst us today also. There's a Dr. Frankenstein out there, many of them. And here's the story. These companies, these biotech companies that want to make a man have already made animals. Seven different animals have been made using genetically modified organism seeds. Would you believe it? There's Dolly the sheep. I remember that one several years ago. But now they've created a dog. They've also created chickens, lots of chickens. And they're creating them because they want to give them to the people, like I assume Purdue and everybody else, the big companies that raise chickens, to sell to us. And the chicken they created in a laboratory, this is chemically created chickens. They're not using, you know, fertility. They're not using fertility seeds. They're not using sperm. They don't have an egg that has, and they don't talk about ovulation. They're doing it with chemical means in a lab. The chickens are bald. They don't have that hair on top or that feathery stuff. And the reason is they've been created that way. It's because in many of the places where chickens are raised, it's warm. And if a chicken's warm, it doesn't produce, it doesn't reproduce enough, it doesn't grow as fast. So they figure if we produce a chicken or create a chicken without hair, anything on top, we'll get better chickens quicker. And that's what they did. They've also engineered GMO goats. They've made goats. These things, by the way, look like goats, look like a dog, look like chickens, except for the hair, look like sheep. And they've also come up with two different types of fish. They have created in a laboratory two different types of fish. And they have one of these groups, they put them in the water and they're swimming all around. They mate. They have sex together and they procreate. They propagate and procreate. They have baby fish. And so they create the fish in the lab, male and female in effect, put them in the water, let them swim free, and then they have sex with each other, and they make more baby fish. And this is how we're going to grow more fish and better fish, apparently. Now, I don't know if this is healthy, because where it's all leading is to the man, the Frankenstein monster, a genetically modified man, biotechnically created and produced in a laboratory. Right? It's against the law at the present time in the United States to create genetically modified organisms that result in human babies, a no-no in this country. But when the law was passed, Congress screwed up again. When the law, and maybe intentionally here, because they do a lot of things for these companies, when the law was passed, it did not give very much enforcement capacity to the government under the law. In other words, you're not supposed to do this, they said, but if you do it, they don't say you go to jail for 20 years, Or you got to pay a fine of $3 million. None of that's in there. There's no penalty spelled out. So the law is deficient. Now, we are going to talk about rape. 3 years ago on my television show, I spent almost a whole show talking about rape in the United States, how we don't prosecute these cases. Do you know, are you aware that in the United States, we only prosecute 3% of the rapes that happen every year? Only 3% of the rapes that occur are prosecuted every year. Now, here's what's happening. I said on the TV show, there are rape kits. The government provides rape kits. Every state has rape kits now. And it's got directions. You take the sperm in the woman, you take the DNA under the nails, all the things that have to be done to have a successful rape prosecution. You do everything the rape kit tells you. Then you send it to a lab. The lab produces the results. Just like when we buy drugs, they find someone with drugs, they send it to a lab to make sure it's opium, heroin, marijuana, what have you. And then it comes back, and then you prosecute based on that evidence. Well, they weren't using the rape kits 3 years ago. They're still not using the rape kits. I can't believe it. And this goes back decades. I don't know if it's 30, 40 years they haven't been used. The Department of Justice recently said and they don't prosecute rapes, the Department of Justice. It's a state thing and a local level thing, that there are 400,000 of these rape kits full of stuff that has to be tested, gathering dust, sitting on shelves in evidence rooms in police departments, have never been sent to a lab. The rape cases have never been prosecuted. In fact, that 400,000 number they mentioned could be as high as 1 million. And that's the primary reason that only 3% of the cases get prosecuted. They don't have the evidence. Now, why? Well, I'll tell you. One is money. Everything's money in this world, it seems. It costs $500 to $1,000 to test each kit. Local governments don't have the money set aside to spend on rape kits. They have put this back in the line at the end of the line, behind drugs and everything else. And, you know, sort of a shame. Is this another example of we don't like women? I don't know. I'm not saying it is, and I don't make this up all as I go along in my life, but I just feel it might be involved here. It's not important because it involves women. It just costs too much money. So they don't do it because they don't allocate for that. Also, in addition to costing too much money to test the kits, if they start testing them and they start prosecuting, they will need more manpower. They'll need more police officers. They're going to need court attendants. They're going to need more judges. They're going to need more physical structures for courtrooms because there's just so many of these rape kits. Rape's a big business in the United States. I don't know how many rapes are committed every day, but you read about it. It's a problem on college campuses and everywhere else. Rape is big business, and the prosecuting authorities, the legal authorities in this country, are not paying attention to it. And that's because it costs too much money to do it. They're not geared up to do it. Memphis, Tennessee is an example. In Memphis, Tennessee, they estimate there are 12,000 rape kits. One city, 12,000 rape kits sitting on the shelves. It goes back to the 1980s. It isn't all yesterday, but still a lot of rape kits that have not been handled. Now, I find it interesting. All this military equipment goes to the police. We now have SWAT teams. The smallest community, like Ferguson, Missouri, has a SWAT team. The guys with the rifles, they're precise shooters, and they wear all that gear they got from the government. We don't need these SWAT teams. And now we're paying people to be members of the SWAT team. And they're going out to serve a subpoena. They send a SWAT team in some community and a problem occurred. Somebody got shot. They send SWAT teams out on bullshit stuff. That's the only way it can be put. Why is the money being wasted on SWAT teams? as opposed to taking care of these rape kits. That's just one example. And again, the money that we waste fighting drugs, putting people in jail for a long time. We've been fighting drugs since 1960, and it has not been a successful fight. We have more people in jail for carrying a half an ounce of marijuana than any country in the world. In fact, we have more people in jail than any country in the world. In fact, and I'm telling you this, it is a fact, we have more people in our jails than the next four nations combined. Okay. I don't know. I think we're a screwed up society many times, and this is just another example. Janet Yellen, we're going to talk about money for a minute. Janet Yellen, she is the chair of the Federal Reserve System. Big job, big deal. First woman chair. Big job. Don't think she's friendly. She's a banker. So we put this all in proper perspective. She is a banker. But at a talk last week, she said something that shocked everyone. Her audience were bankers. It shocked her audience. But she's like the Pope all of a sudden. She's talking about things that their people don't want to talk about, their people being an immediate hierarchy. She told the bankers at this meeting, she announced, publicly she said this, the average net worth of 62 million households is $11,000. 62 million households in the United States, the average net worth is $11,000. What a disgrace. This is terrible. These people are working two and three jobs, husband and wife, can't send the kids to college, can't afford to buy a house, can't pay the mortgage, losing their house, can't buy this, can't buy that. The middle class is gone, and before it wasn't 11,000 net worth. You know, go back 20 years, the net worth was pretty good for the middle class. The middle class has been destroyed. The bankers she's talking to are taking home bonuses of 20, 40, some of them $200 million a year. They're making money like no one would believe. And she's telling them there are people out there, and we've got to be concerned about them because, you know, you can't have people out there making so little and accumulating so little while there's a group on the other side that's accumulating a lot and it's getting very rich. Good for you, Janet Yellen. We're going to go to Ebola. Ebola, not the way they've been talking on TV. Here's an issue that's come up that is not getting much attention. By the way, if I seem to talk about things that we don't hear on the television in the United States, hear on the radio, or see on TV, hear on the radio and read in the papers, it's because I get a lot of my news from the British press, British TV, and from European newspapers. And Canadian newspapers. I want to tell you something, friends. Canadian newspapers, I think, printed as it is, they tell me more about my country than papers and TV in my country do. In any event, Ebola. The question has come up, is Ebola a naturally, born disease, virus? Or was it created in a lab someplace and got out? Now, you say, why do you even raise this? Well, it turns out that one of the first people, if not the first governments, to get into Ebola was Russia 35 years ago under the Soviet Union, and they continued after the Soviet Union fell. They have laboratories where they're into biowarfare, create think chemicals that are going to kill, and they got into Ebola. And now they sent some of this stuff. This is documented to Western Africa. And did this get out? That's the question. Did this stuff really come accidentally get out, not intentionally? Or is it naturally born? There are scientists on both sides, and the issue is being approached, talked about at the present time. That is the show for this week. I thank you again for joining me. Come back again next week. Tell your friends to listen in. I know most of you do not catch it tonight, Tuesday night at 9, but you listen to the archive version during the week or on Facebook and Twitter. I am all over the place. I want to share with you again that I wrote a book. I tell you every week, The World Upside Down. The World Upside Down by Louis Patron. You can find it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. If you like the show and what I say, you will like the book. If you don't like the show, don't buy the book. You will not enjoy it. Thank you again for joining me. I look forward to being with you next week.